So we're reading from Canto 2 today. I was thinking in different temples, I thought the canto just revolves around the first one again and again and again. But I'm glad that we went to number 2 today. We'll do the invocation, which is just before verse 1. We'll read the purport and the translation as well, and then we'll go into text 1, translation and purport, and then we'll talk on text 1. So the one is up there. Yeah, so the invocation I'll just read out, and then we'll move on to the text today. That is the invocation, by the way. O my Lord, Namaha, my respectful obeisances unto you. Bhagavate, unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudevaya, unto Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O my Lord, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Vasudevaya means, to Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Since by chanting the name of Krishna, Vasudev, one can achieve all the good results of charity, austerity, and penances, it is to be understood that by the chanting of this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, the author or the speaker or any one of the readers of Srimad Bhagavatam is offering respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the principles of creation are described, and thus the first canto may be called creation. Similarly, in the second canto, the post-creation cosmic manifestation is described. The different planetary systems are described in the second canto as different parts of the universal body of the Lord. For this reason, the second canto may be called the cosmic manifestation. There are 10 chapters in the second canto, and in these 10 chapters, the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam and the different symptoms of this purpose are narrated. The first chapter describes the glories of chanting, and it hints at the process by which the neophyte devotees may perform meditation on the universal form of the Lord. In the first verse, Shukadev Goswami replies to the questions of Maharaj Parikshit, who asked him about one's duty at the point of death. Maharaj Parikshit was glad to receive Shukadev Goswami, and he was proud of being a descendant of Arjuna, the intimate friend of Krishna. Personally, he was very humble and meek, but he expressed his gladness that Lord Krishna was very kind to his grandfathers, the sons of Pandu, especially his own grandfather, Arjuna. And because Lord Krishna was always pleased with Maharaj Parikshit's family, at the verge of Maharaj Parikshit's death, Shukadev Goswami was sent to help him in the process of self-realization. Maharaj Parikshit was a devotee of Lord Krishna from his childhood, so he had natural affection for Krishna. Shukadev Goswami could understand his devotion. Therefore, he welcomed the questions about the king's duty. Because the king hinted that worship of Lord Krishna is the ultimate function of every living entity, Shukadev Goswami welcomed the suggestion and said, "Because you have raised questions about Krishna, your question is most glorious." The translation of the first verse is as follows. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, "My dear King, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial to all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists." Purport. Even the very question is so nice that it is the best subject matter for hearing. Simply by such questioning and hearing, one can achieve the highest perfectional stage of life. Because Lord Krishna is the original Supreme Person, any question about Him is original and perfect. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the highest perfection of life is to achieve the transcendental loving service of Krishna. Because questions and answers about Krishna elevate one to that transcendental position, the questions of Maharaj Parikshit about Krishna philosophy are greatly glorified. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to absorb his mind completely in Krishna, and such absorption can be effected simply by hearing about the uncommon activities of Krishna. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that simply by understanding the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna's appearance, disappearance, and activities, one can immediately return home, back to Godhead, and never come back to this miserable condition of material existence. It is very auspicious, therefore, to hear always about Krishna. So Maharaj Parikshit requested Shukadev Goswami to narrate the activities of Krishna so that he could engage his mind in Krishna. The activities of Krishna are non-different from Krishna himself. As long as one is engaged in hearing such transcendental activities of Krishna, he remains aloof from the conditional life of material existence. The topics of Lord Krishna are so auspicious that they purify the speaker, the hearer, and the inquirer. They are compared to the Ganges waters, which flow from the toe of Lord Krishna. Wherever the Ganges waters go, they purify the land and the person who bathes in them. Similarly, Krishna Katha, or the topics of Krishna, are so pure that wherever they are spoken, the place, the hearer, the inquirer, the speaker, and all concerned become purified. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshuranmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarupyascha Kripa Sindhu Behevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jagatguru Srila Prabhupada ki. So, thank you for allowing me to speak here. All the seniors of Bhaktivedanta Manor, Mataji's and Prabhuji's for allowing me to speak. I ask for your blessings also to speak something of value and purification. This is a big honor to be speaking on the second canto, first verse invocation. This should be done by, you know, someone who's really qualified to introduce the second canto, cosmic manifestation, and to give a recap on the entire first canto. So I'll try my best, but I'm just going to try and give some reflection of Srila Prabhupada's purport and the translation. So from what I got by reading this verse, text 1, is that there are two types of questions. simply. There's good questions and there's bad questions. And depending on your question, it will elevate you to a certain platform. So the quality of your questions will have a corresponding effect on the quality of your entire life. The better questions you have in life, the better quality of life you have. And Srila Prabhupada says in the first part of the purport that even the question is so nice, that is the best subject matter for hearing. And that's quite an interesting thing. I'll try and come back to that later. But Srila Prabhupada gives this one example of how when you improve the quality of a question, your direction in life completely changes as well. And back in the day, the concentration camps used to hold many of these people. They were sentenced to be killed soon. And when you're in that moment, you're going to certainly have a lot of questions on your mind. You know, why am I here? When are they going to take me? What can I do about this unfairness? So depending on your question, you will act also and introspect on the answer. So there was many people in that concentration camp. They were asking, when am I going to die next? When's the day going to come when I'm going to die? Their question was, when am I going to die? But there was one specific person, and he thought that asking that question is pretty useless. So he asked, okay, how can I escape? And so that became his meditation. He asked, how can I escape every day? How can I escape? How can I escape? Not when am I going to die? And because he was meditating on it, his consciousness was on escaping. And therefore, when he saw an opportunity, he saw a cart full of dead bodies. Because he was asking that question, his intelligence told him, okay, jump on those piles of dead bodies, and that's your escape. So he jumped over the fence. He went on the piles of dead bodies. They didn't recognize him. I think Srila Prabhupada mentions he's climbing underneath the dead bodies to get to the very bottom, so he's secure. And he makes it out. He escapes the concentration camp, and he is apparently the only one who escapes the concentration camp because of his questioning. So when we have an opportunity for an elevated life, we can also ask questions to get us there. In Bhagavatam class, we have a chance to always ask questions. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that only questions regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead can satisfy the soul. I think this is mentioned in First Canto, Chapter 1. He talks about birds and beasts, men. Everyone in the material world has questions and answers from day to night. In the morning they wake up, they're asking questions. In the evening they're asking questions. Birds asking questions. They come to the nest, they're asking questions. They're getting answers. Businessmen, they're asking questions. Politicians, students asking questions and getting answers. Press people, legislators. They're all asking questions, but none of them are satisfied at the end of the day. So, here in the purport, in the translation, Shukadev Goswami says, the answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists. So it's questions we should ask that are approved by transcendentalists. So there was one time, a disciple or a follower of Srila Prabhupada asked a question to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was doing his lecture, and at the question and answer time, one of the devotees asked, how many transcendentalists are there? And humbly, Srila Prabhupada was going to be like, okay, I'm going to try and work it out, But before he actually said anything to answer, he chastised that person. He said, what is the benefit of asking such a question? What will it do for your spiritual life? If I remember right. He said, don't Don't think about how many transcendentalists are there. You make yourself one and go to Godhead yourself. And then he made a joke. When you go to the ticket station, you don't ask the ticket keeper, how many tickets have you sold today? No, you get on your train and you go to your destination. So he got chastised in that way. So there's good questions, and then there's questions that benefit not yourself nor anyone else. So here we're talking about the question of Maharaj Parikshit being glorified by Sri Shukadev Goswami because it's beneficial. So only that which is beneficial to everyone is glorified. And there's many qualities. We know that Maharaj Parikshit was a devotee at birth, and he has, since he's a devotee, all the devotee qualities. So he's Pandita Samadarshana also. He can see that there's a spirit soul in every living entity, regardless of the type of body that they have. And not only is he Pandita Samadarshana, he's knowledgeable in terms of matter and spirit, but he's fully surrendered to Krishna. And when one is fully surrendered to Krishna in that way, then Krishna can empower them fully to give up home, to give up family, wife, kids, and to ask questions to Shukadev Goswami in such a way that it benefits generations to come. He knew the answer to these questions already because he's a devotee, but because he's fully surrendered, Krishna can use him in a way that can benefit generations, and he can become glorified. But if we're not fully surrendered, Krishna can't use the instrument. You can use us as an instrument. If the instrument isn't bendable or flows like water according to the container that Krishna is putting us in, if we're resistant to the container, if we're not a very polished trombone, then when Krishna tries to play the trombone, it won't work. So we're trying to be instruments for Krishna, and Maharaj Parikshit is the perfect example of the instrument because he's fully surrendered. There are six symptoms of surrender, and Maharaj Parikshit has all six symptoms of surrender. And we can also individuate ourselves in such a way and see, okay, am I fully surrendered? If you have these six things, I mean, maybe you can say, yes, I have everything. And that's maybe something to ask another devotee about yourself, because we can't see ourselves so clearly also. But if you have these six things, you can say, okay, yes, I'm trying my best to, or I'm at a certain level of that kind of surrender. The first quality of those six is accept things favorable for discharging devotional service. Second thing is reject things unfavorable for discharging devotional service. And always believing firmly in the Lord's protection. And four is feel exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord. The fifth is have no interest apart from having the same interest as the Lord. And the sixth is always feeling meek and humble. So then we can see, okay, and I'm going to try and glorify Maharaj Parikshit in this way, because we can see he's fully surrendered. So when we go to the first one, accepting things favorable for discharging devotional service, we can see Maharaj Parikshit lived like that since his birth. He was always interested in Krishna Katha, chanting Krishna's names, finding about his Leela. He was serving the entire world. He was a descendant of the Pandus. So in the invocation it says he was very proud of that descendants, but he's also meek and humble. But he left home and he accepted Sadhu Sangha and Bhagavata Shravana. Two of the five most important things in Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavata Shravana means hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and associating with devotees. We see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes with Ramananda Rai. Ramananda Rai is asking, what is the highest perfection of life? And the first thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agrees with him on, it's not take up devotional service and leave Vanashram. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects that. But as soon as Ramananda Rai says, is it Ramananda Rai? Ramananda Rai. As soon as he says, getting the association of pure devotees and hearing Bhagavatam, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts that. So this is exactly what Maharaj Parikshit is doing. He's accepting Sadhu Sangha and Srimad Bhagavatam Shravanam. He's rejecting everything unfavorable for devotional service. He's left his family, he's left his wife, kids, job, status, social order. He's even left the four propensities which we are all engaged in. He's left eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He's left everything. One lecture I heard on YouTube, Srila Prabhupada said he wants all his disciples to eat less, sleep less, defend less, and mate less. And that is what he wants his disciples to do. That will make him happy, he said. It's interesting. So he left his life, he left the four propensities, and now he's now convinced about the Lord's protection. He has left it in such a way and gone to the most spiritual place, Ganges, with all the spiritual people of the world, the sadhus and the brahmanas. And since birth, he's had conviction of Lord Krishna's protection. Srila Prabhupada was saying, Maharaj Parikshit used to play with little baby Krishna dolls in his youth. So devotee children have natural affection for Krishna in that way. But there's a right type of proud and then there's a wrong type of proud to have. Proud, okay, you're in devotional service. But not proud when we're putting ourselves over others and saying I'm better than them. Then the fourth one, he's exclusively dependent on the Lord's mercy. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gornitai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. He's gone to the Ganges for all support. He's using the rest of his time, his 7 days, just to listen to Krishna Katha. He's fully exclusively dependent on the Lord's mercy. He knows that nothing else can save him. He's not endeavoring to do anything. All he's doing is giving his ear to Krishna Katha. He's not doing anything but that. He's left all other duties. He's just exclusively dependent. Like, Krishna, if I just hear your stories, that's all I need right now. And he has no other interest than the interest of the Lord also. He's asking these questions. Srila Radhanath Swami Maharaj says, Maharaj Pariksha is asking these type of questions so we can imitate him. He's asking such profound questions, such valuable questions for generations to come, so we can imitate those kind of questions. We can improve our quality of life as well, in a safe way. And he's meek and humble, as mentioned in Srila Prabhupada's purport. So there was a contradiction. How could you be proud yet meek and humble? I'm not sure. But I heard a lecture where you can be self-confident and still humble. And the way we do that is in our own journey of spiritual life. If we're trying our hardest, and if we're seeing results every day, we naturally get self-confidence. But when we compare ourselves to other devotees and we see how terribly we're performing, then we become humble. But self-confident still, but humble. So you can do that through introspection. So only when one is so surrendered, Krishna can engage him in such a service as Maharaj Pariksha is engaged in. And when I was in D-Land, I was getting training by His Holiness Bhakti Param Swami Maharaj. And there's just little teenager boys, just like we are. We're young, and Maharaj is sitting at the front of the class, and we're behind him. And we're listening to a lecture by His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj. And after the lecture, Maharaj asks, is there any questions? And so the boys don't say anything. So we're like, okay, yeah, we kind of understood what's going on. Maybe, at least for me, I was like, okay, I understand, kind of thing. I can kind of picture what's going on. And then Maharaj asked a question. Bhakti Param Maharaj asked a question. It was a question, I'm not sure, I forgot what it was about. It's just a simple question just about bhakti. How we can perfect our lives in bhakti. I think something along the lines of that. I was thinking, what kind of question is that? Like, everyone knows how to do that. He just gave a lecture. in my mind, I was like, we know how to do that. You can chant Hare Krishna. There's so much pride in my head. But as soon as he asked such a simple question that even he knew the answer of, it facilitated Bhakti Charaswami Maharaj to elaborate further on the subject matter and extract more secrets from the Bhagavatam. And when we have those secrets, you know, we can refine our intelligence through asking these questions that even we know ourselves. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on the Atmaram verse, he explained it in 64 different ways. So it's not just one way of understanding one verse. You can explain it and take out all the essence in 64 ways. That's a challenge for every Bhagavatam speaker. I can't do that myself. But it's not just one answer for one question. Many, many answers, many, many angles. Just as we learn shlokas, we should go up, down, left, right. In Bhakti Shastri, we're learning, okay, we shouldn't just go, you know, one after the other, after the other. Backwards is good. Jumping from one to the other. See, like this. So then, if we do that, our intelligence becomes refined. We can see in the middle of the day, okay, now I'm remembering these shlokas, they're all in my head. You start meditating on it. So the more angles you have, the more facility it gives you to meditate on those topics of Krishna. So that was just to emphasize, I think the devotee who gave Bhagavatam class, he said, even if you know the answer, just ask. Never hurt. Arjun asked, he knew all the answers. Bhakti Prem Maharaj asked, he knew all the answers. Maharaj Pariksit asked, he knew all the answers also. I want to try and do this in my own life. Not be proud, but just to ask and facilitate Krishna consciousness, to get more of a grasp of the subject matter. These kind of questions and answers are so potent for our spiritual life because they're not on any material level. Goloke Premadani Harinama Sankirtana, it comes from the spiritual world immediately. It comes from Golok Vrindavan, these kind of subject matters about Krishna. Krishna's name, form, pastimes and lila comes straight from Golok Vrindavan. So when we access that kind of realm, we can induce our consciousness there as well. That's why these questions, you can have questions, and for 7 days you can answer these type of questions because it's not tiring. In active devotion, we learn that material subjects are very, very tiring. If you say mango, 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 you'll never feel satisfied as if you've eaten a mango. But as soon as you say Krishna, 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 you'll feel satisfied. Even though Krishna, you can't see him straight to face. That's why Krishna in the purport, it says Krishna's name, his activities are non different from himself. Because you feel satisfied even by chanting his holy name. Then you can test it like that. But you don't feel satisfied by chanting mango, 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 mango. So the question Maharaj Pariksit is asking is, please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, especially at the time of death. So this question is glorified, and it's auspicious. This question is very auspicious. So there's to make something auspicious, it requires four things. Four things. If anything in this world has these four things, you can say, okay, it's auspicious. It benefits everyone. It attracts everyone. It produces all good qualities. And I think it's just here. And it bestows superior happiness. Superior happiness. Sorry, I had a brain freeze. It bestows superior happiness. So these kind of questions, so why is this question glorious? Is because it has the aspects of all these four categories. It is benefiting to everyone. As Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, wherever they are spoken, the place, the hearer, the inquirer, the speaker, and all concerned, the readers, are also purified. So it benefits everyone, even the place, the people who bathe their intelligence in this topic, in these questions, they're also purified. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punarjanma neti mamiti sarjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of Krishna's activities, disappearances and appearances. What was the ending of the verse? After leaving this body does not return to this material world, but they return back to me. So it's benefiting everyone to ask these kind of questions about Krishna's lila, about Krishna's activities, about his appearance and disappearance. Because you will, after death, you will not come back to this material world, but you'll go to Krishna. So even if a lecture, like in Bhakti Charamaj, when we were traveling, he gave Bengali lectures. And I was thinking, I was at the back of the lecture, I was like, I was feeling so disengaged. I was like, you know, what am I doing here? You know, can I get anything out of this? You know, shall I, you know, I'll just be here to, you know, give Maharaj moral support. I'll act like I've understood everything. And then one of my godbrothers said, even if you don't understand the language, this transcendental vibration is so auspicious. Even if you don't understand the language, even if you're not eager to hear it, the transcendental vibration of Krishna Katha, especially from a pure devotee, is so auspicious because it has these four categories. But a business person or a businessman can only help himself and a few other people who are in charge of that business. But this Krishna Katha will help everyone. So it benefits everyone. So the business is not auspicious, depending on what business it is. Material business is not auspicious because it's not benefiting the entire world, unless it does. That's for your research to find out. But this question is benefiting everyone, generations after generations. Why? If everyone knows the verse, Cheto darpana marjanam bhavamaha davagni nirvapanam Shreya Kedava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidyavadu Jivanam Anandam Buddhi Vartanam Pratipadam Purnamitasvadanam Sarvatma Snapanam Paramvichayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. All glories to the Shri Krishna Sankirtana, which cleanses the heart of all dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fires of conditioned life or repeated birth and death. This Sankirtana movement is a prime benediction for humanity at large, benefiting everyone. It is attracting everyone. This kind of question that Maharaj Pariksit is asking is attracting karmis, gyanis, yogis, children. Even the animals in Jharkhand forest are attracted by Krishna's katha, Krishna's lila. The children also attracted. Srila Prabhupada said, no one in this world can reject and not take part in the Sankirtan movement. Everyone is attracted to Krishna katha. Karmis, gyanis, yogis, everyone. They're so full of nectar. Nam nam akari bahuta. They produce the nectar for which we are always anxious. They also produce good qualities. These type of questions is glorified because they produce all good qualities. There's some Gurukuli boys in Mayapur, and I think I've mentioned one time before. One CEO of a corporate, high corporate job came to the Gurukul and, you know, saw, okay, what kind of education system is this? So she was taking notes, she met the temple president of the Gurukul, and she observed the boys. And after a while, she gave her verdict to the temple president. She said, I can take any one of these boys, I can put them in my position in the corporate company, and I will be happy. They have all the good qualities that they need to take over my job. Because they're devotees. So these kind of questions and these kind of answers produce all good qualities. And it bestows superior happiness. Why? Because we get to go home and have eternal happiness. Devi he shaguna mai mama maya duratya mam evam vipadyante mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome, but one who has surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So surrender. Through this surrender, through these questions and answers, we can become better instruments of Krishna. We can also become surrendered, just like Maharaj Pariksit. And with that surrender, we can cross over the material existence and reach eternal happiness. I'll just finish up soon, but before this second verse of Sikshastakam Nam Nam Akari Bahudani Jasarva Shaktis Tatrar Pitana Yamitasmaranena Kalaha Itadashita Vakripa Bhagavan Mamapi Durdeva Medrishnam Hijani Nanuragaha. It gives the satisfaction of the soul. We're searching for that satisfaction. And because the holy name in Krishna Katha gives us that satisfaction, it can be compared to watering the root of the tree instead of trying to water the leaves of that tree. When we're connected to Krishna in such a way, we can feel satisfied. There's some pictures on Google, and I was trying to get pictures of how, you know, how if you serve the finger, or at least if the finger wants to enjoy the food, you will never be satisfied. But as soon as you give the stomach the food through the mouth, you'll become satisfied. So I searched on Google, because I had to do this transmigration for the Bhakti Shastri. And I was searching, you know, playing with food. And you get all these types of children who are just like, you know, got food on their head, and they're playing with broccolis and pastas, and everything's on their mouth. They look happy. And it would be ecstatic to do that. But it would not satisfy your soul. It's not going to satisfy your soul. So it depends what kind of happiness you're interested in. But we know from this verse we're interested in that nectar for which we're always anxious for. That nectar for which we're looking and trying to experience in everything around us. Maybe in Mahaprasad, devotees, deities, everything. And this ISKCON is the only place where you can get that rasa fulfilled. So ask questions, even if you know the answer. Ask questions that are going to be beneficial, not only for you, but for everyone else. And let's try and learn something about Maharaj Pariksit's life and shine the instruments of our devotional service so Krishna can use us in the way he wants to. Not in the way we want to be used, not in the way we want to serve, but in the way Krishna wants to use us. And always chant the holy name of the Lord, Kirtaniya Sadahari. And in this way, we can go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yeah.
I think we're all feeling a bit of pressure to ask good questions now. I have a question about hearing, and to really receive the benefit like Maharaj Pariksit, he was fully absorbed, completely absorbed in hearing. So I was wondering for us if you have any guidance or tips on how we can become more absorbed in our hearing and in all of our devotional practices.
Hearing is one of the hardest things to do because the mind is so polluted. Even the senior devotees, whenever we ask them, our mentors, we're asking how to chant the holy names with attention. And they say, we're also struggling. And it hurts. It hurts. At least it hurts me to hear. Everyone is struggling with this one problem of attentiveness, of hearing. I think Brahmananda Swami Maharaj said the most difficult service he's ever given by Srila Prabhupada is not to build temples. Is not to preach all over the world. It's just to chant the Maha Mantra properly with attention. The most difficult service. So it's demotivating to an extent when you hear something like that, because you can hear, oh, wow, it. And maybe they're humble. And I'm sure they are humble. They're probably like, psh. But at least for me, it's like, wow, we have such a huge way to go. And with that demotivation, we can be motivated. And only when we're motivated to be attentive, that's where attentiveness comes. I think the book by Shiva Maharaj, Sankalp Kamudi, it starts attentiveness, then determination, mood, and then prayer. If I remember right. Sambhu, thank you for that. So actually, I was thinking, and I asked many, many questions of how to be attentive in the first place. And it comes from determination. If we're reading in the Living Name book, you have to perpetually, again and again, bring your mind back to the mantra. So I think in the same way, it comes with hearing in Bhagavatam class. Perpetually, with determination, bring your mind back to the words of the speaker. Perpetually, with determination, again and again and again. you can see how the senior devotees are also listening. Their eyes are fixed. There's just the speaker and there's their notepad, potentially. Their eyes are fixed. They're not on their phones. They have no distractions. They're not talking to anyone. They're in the front of the class. They're not at the back. With that determination, no offense, Hare Krishna. Well, when they have that much determination, and through hearing improves. Where they say as soon as you hear one Maha Mantra clearly, it's easier to hear the rest. So as soon as you hear something clearly and you cling on to that attentiveness, slowly, just after practice, after practice, after practice, it should improve. So that's just determination. I can reflect. It's okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the amazing class. I had two things. So one was a comment and one was a question. So the comment, we're probably all getting a bit interested about this, with Jagannath Prabhu's pastimes. So I don't know if everybody joined the memorials, but I can't remember who it was, but somebody had shared a pastime where they were in India with Jagannath Prabhu in a rickshaw. And Jagannath Prabhu knows the answers, but he was just asking the Vrijavasi in the rickshaw around, like, oh, do you know who Krishna's consort is? Do you know, like, the pastimes and stuff like that? Just talking about Radharani, like, very basic, simple questions. And at the end of it, this devotee who was with him was getting, like, why are you asking these simple questions? Like, you know the answers, why are you asking? And in the end, Jagannath Prabhu was like, he just wanted to relish sharing the answers from a Vrijavasi. So that kind of just echoes your point about just asking the simple questions, because one is you just relish it, and the second is that it will be beneficial for everyone just hearing it. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to share that. The second thing was a question around, like, the quality of the questions. So I get, like, we can even ask simple questions because that obviously fulfills both those roles, relishment as well as helping others. But then the thing that I'm thinking about is the level of the speaker as well, or the level of the person I'm asking the question to. How much should we be taking that into consideration? Because, like, say it's, for example, a Maharaj or somebody very senior, but we're asking simple questions to, like, personally, I feel like that's wasting a bit of their time because we could go to somebody else.
Yes, good question. I think in Canto 1 and in Bhagavad Gita, in the verse talking about surrendering to a guru, I think Srila Prabhupada talks about how to ask questions. He says, ask questions that are to the subject matter. He asks ask questions that are not challenging, and ask questions that are in great respect for the speaker. And if I miss any other qualities, I apologize. But those main things. And also the speaker will see your genuineness. I think there's a story Bhakti Charamaraj says in his Ocean of Mercy, that whenever he asked a question to Srila Prabhupada, it didn't go the way he wanted it to go. He was asking questions, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, maybe would have you know, put it to the side, or maybe even chastised him for that question. And then he was talking to Tamakrishna Maharaj, and he asked, you know, why does this happen when I ask Srila Prabhupada questions? And Tamakrishna Maharaj said, do you really want to know the answer to those questions? Or are you asking for the sake of asking? And as soon as Bhakti Charan Maharaj heard that, he understood that when we have questions on a genuine platform, then Srila Prabhupada can see our actual intention, and he responds on that level of sincerity. But if we ask questions just for the sake of it, at least his reflection was that, then Srila Prabhupada can see that mood, and he's not interested in replying. So then he asked, then the next day he asked an actual question which he was really genuine in, really genuinely looking for an answer in. And Srila Prabhupada accepted the mood, gave him the full answer. So, I mean, I don't know if that helps. Yeah. I think, for example, if on a neophyte level, you may have the most basic questions. So that's obviously they'll understand that mood. But if they can see that you're not doing it for the benefit of others, or you have a challenging mentality, or you actually have a desire to see another angle, swamis or gurus can normally test the mood or the sincerity. For me, I can't do that. I just answer based on face-to-face. But I think there's a level of sincerity that they judge on. So asking questions that you're genuinely interested in never can go wrong. Can never go wrong. Unless you're not interested in the answer, or it's done in a challenging mood, or without respect for the speaker, or away from the topic, then not going to be answered, I don't think. But every question, as mentioned here, and you mentioned in other classes, again, if it's for the sake of asking, don't ask. But if you have a genuine interest to facilitate everyone, if you have a genuine interest to facilitate more topics, if it's genuine, then they can see that, and because they'll know that the benefit is there, even if they know that you know the answer, they'll do it for the benefit of everyone else. I think.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada mentions quite a lot how only through pleasing the spiritual master can then this knowledge be imparted into you. It can be actually realized. I think it's a couple of verses later, one of the purports. Even despite making this point that only through pleasing the spiritual master, he ridicules any idea that it's like some sort of mystical process, that just by pleasing them you get realization. You have to go through the process of inquiring submissively and whatnot. But I'm still not quite sure how much is the question and answers. Of course, you're getting some knowledge, but is this actually how the realization comes, or is this just like a means, that it's just like almost a ritual that allows deeper realizations to take place?
Just to understand if the question is correct, is to get advancement, we need to serve Guru. So how beneficial are these questions, and how much realization will we get from these questions, or how much advancement will we get from these questions? Is that the question?
Yeah, and how much? Because if you get an answer to one question, this maybe deals with one specific situation, but you see advanced personalities, they have the realization that they apply Prabhupada in all of their aspects of their life, and how this comes about.
Yeah, I mean, we could say like this: to please a spiritual master, we can ask questions. The spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he likes his disciples asking questions. That's one of the things we can do to serve Guru. I think several times Srila Prabhupada says to ask questions means you're intelligent. To ask questions means that you are not a blind follower. To ask questions can obviously facilitate more Krishna consciousness. But I think several times Srila Prabhupada says, I like my disciples asking questions. In the end of a class, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, if there's no questions by Lord Chaitanya, the speaker feels like, I haven't done my work right. But if there's questions, okay, now I can delve deeper. And that's also where realizations definitely come out. Because we are... when we discuss such topics even more intimately is when more juice can be revealed. Like Revati Nandan Prabhu said in Bhakti Shastri class, it helps our intelligence in Krishna consciousness. So that's one thing we can do to serve Guru. We can put those two things together, I guess, and facilitate both service to Guru and good questions. Does that answer the question? Does anyone have any kind of reflection on that?
I was just thinking this is one verse which says, Yasya Deve Pada Bhakti Yata Deve Tata Guru Tasyeta Katityarata Prakashante Mahatmanaha, which means that only for one who has implicit faith in both the spiritual master and Krishna the purports of the Vedic scriptures are revealed within their hearts. So I was thinking this question and answer is a process of building faith. Mm. And the more we question, the more we get answers, and our faith increases. And then the purports are revealed from within our faith in Guru and Krishna increase. Mm. So I was thinking it's a cycle of building faith. Mm.
Perfect. That was sick. Thank you. Anything else? Rantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.